This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, this is our yearly Tips on Preparing Your 2016 Federal Income Tax Return. It's my great pleasure to have as our guest David Hellman, a specialist in taxation law, also in estate planning, trust, and probate law. He's certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's also a CPA. His office is in San Rafael. This segment of Your Legal Rights is funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization, which certifies specialization in 11 fields of law. Also funded by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which certifies specialization in 4 areas of the law, and by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. I'd like you all to know that we are having a Call a CPA night, Call a Lawyer night tonight, and I'm going to give you that number. Please jot it down so that you have it. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Our CPAs and our attorneys are there. We have several areas of the law covered, so make yourself comfortable. In just a few minutes, I'd like you to feel free to call in and speak with David Hellman and myself. Toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
It's always wonderful to have you back. What are some of the things that you feel people are tripping on in preparing, let's say honestly tripping on, in preparing their materials for their tax return?
Well, I think the biggest issue is probably omission. And it's either something that they will go ahead and try and do their return before they have all the information. So, for instance, a lot of brokerage firms delayed sending out 1099 INTs and DIVs and information that didn't come until maybe it hasn't even come yet. They said, a lot of them said they wouldn't release it until the middle of February. And people sometimes lose documents. They get something in the mail, or maybe it doesn't come in the mail, and they forget that they should have gotten it. So one way to avoid that problem is to look back at your prior year's tax returns and make sure you've got the same information to carry forward into 2016. That's one thing. And the other issue is that people sometimes are entitled to deductions or expenses that they don't take. Sometimes they'd like to take them and just don't know whether they should or shouldn't.
What are you talking about? Give us some simple example, would you?
If somebody, for instance, bought stationery for their business, and they may not think that that's deductible.
But it is, is it not?
It really is. So they may forget or not put it on their tax return. And that's where a professional can help, but you can also get guidance through materials, and the Internal Revenue Service has publications that tell you what kinds of things generally are deductible. So do a little research if you're going to try and do all this to your own. If you're going to use a professional preparer, they'll know all these things. So then the basic thing is you tell the preparer everything, and if you tell them things that aren't deductible, well, the preparer will leave them off. But at least you won't have omitted something potentially that would give you a benefit.
What about the I understand, although I am not a recipient of any of the proceeds or the help of the Affordable Care Act, but I understand there are some potential complications with respect to the Affordable Care Act that you have to consider in terms of preparing your tax return if you are a recipient.
Right. If you're getting a credit for your insurance premium, then the tax forms up to now and still do ask for information about that. So you have to report your income, you report how much you're paying in premiums, how much you're getting by way of credits, and how much you are paying out of your own pocket. Now, this information comes to you on forms 1095 A, B, and C that come through from
1095 A, B, and C.
There's 3 different forms. You may get some or all of them.
All right.
Most of the computer software has provisions for you to input that data. And then it will calculate whether you are entitled to the credits that you've received. And if you haven't, if you're not entitled to it, then it will essentially add additional tax back onto your income tax return so that you end up having to repay the credit. Now, up until now, the Internal Revenue Service had been holding up refunds on some taxpayers because they hadn't put all the information into their return, either intentionally or just forgot it or didn't know that it needed to go on there.
Mm-hmm.
So their refunds, the government would send them a letter saying you need to provide this information so we can finish processing your return. Well, the president has now issued a directive that the Internal Revenue Service should not hold up returns, refunds, for that reason. But the problem is that it's still the law that you're not entitled to take a credit if your income is too high.
Mm-hmm.
So how the Internal Revenue Service is going to go back and collect that revenue is a big issue. Some of the software companies have said they're not going to change their procedures. So they're still going to require people to provide that data before they will process the return and e-file it. So, and others will probably go along and not require it, but the Internal Revenue Service is in a quandary at the moment, is figuring out how they're going to collect this data and information and payment if needed.
Where do you think that taxpayers, what level of taxpayers do you think are making a mistake by not seeking the help of a professional, whether it's a CPA or whether it's a tax attorney such as yourself? Where are they making the mistake if they're doing it on their own? I mean, we have these computer programs that people can use, and supposedly it helps them. Where do you think the problem is, if there is one?
Well, I think the biggest issue is where you have, say, moderately complicated returns. If you're self-employed and have a Schedule C, if you have rental properties and you have several of them and you use Schedule E, you're not using a professional may be causing you not to get all the deductions you're entitled to. So you may be actually paying more tax than you should if you don't know everything that you can deduct. So those are the kinds of areas where you start. If you have complicated transactions where you have capital gains or losses from the sale of some asset, you may need some professional help there to be sure you're reporting it correctly and that you're getting the appropriate deductions or recognizing the appropriate amount of gain. For instance, if you have property that is subject to depreciation and you sell it at a loss, you're entitled to an ordinary loss under Section 1231 of the Internal Revenue Code. But some people who don't know about that may say, well, it's just a capital loss. Well, there's a big difference in treatment because capital losses, you're limited to $3,000 beyond capital gains, whereas an ordinary loss, you can deduct the entire amount against other sources of income.
How do you determine if something's a capital loss versus an ordinary loss?
Well, a capital loss is when you've sold a capital asset and you end up with a tax loss on the sale.
A capital asset, do you mean like your home?
Well, you can't take a loss on your home, but
no.
let's say stock.
All right.
So if you sell your stock, if you own stock and you sell it at a loss, that's a capital loss.
Yes.
But on the other hand, if you have a car and you use it exclusively in your business, and you've taken some depreciation on it, but you end up selling it at a loss. In other words, you're not getting as much money as you paid for the car, less the depreciation taken, then you're entitled to an ordinary loss on that. But somebody may not recognize that and treat it that way. And there could be a big difference in the tax consequences.
This is darn complicated.
Yeah, this is.
This is not easy stuff.
Right. So that's why professionals, wherever you get the help, can be very helpful to you and help minimize what you pay to the legally required amount.
It seems to me that if people make mistakes who are doing their own tax returns and are not recognizing that they have certain deductions here, maybe they have included something they shouldn't include as income, or maybe they've not looked at it. It seems to me that they can lose more money than if they go to a professional and have a professional do it and pay that person the professional fee.
Generally, that probably is true. If you have anything that's complicated, I mean, if you have a simple return where maybe you just have a W-2 and maybe one dividend statement or an interest statement, a couple for the bank, and a home mortgage and property tax. Well, you might be able to do that fine on your own. But when you get complicated by having your own business or lots of rental properties or something where things can go wrong and you're not a tax expert yourself, best to pay a little bit to get some help, and you're probably going to be saving dollars in the long run.
That makes an awful lot of sense. Let me give you our phone number here in case you would like to present us with your simple little question, everybody. Our toll-free number for your legal rights is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We also have this evening, besides call a CPA at night, and that's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917 if you have a tax question. We are doing also our call a lawyer night, which we do on a monthly basis because I didn't want to disappoint you. That's that same number, 1-800-525-9917, excuse me. And for the areas of law, we have workers' compensation here with Rob Wyman. By the way, if you have a criminal law question, Jeff Hayden, who's a certified specialist in criminal law, will take calls tomorrow. That's Thursday, February 23rd from 9:30 until 11 a.m. He might want to jot down his number, 650-743-6701. If you have an estate planning question, John Martin, a certified specialist in estate planning, will take calls between now and 8 p.m. His number is 650-430-4664, 650-430-4664. If you have a family law question, Janet Frankel, a certified specialist in family law, will take calls, your calls, tomorrow on February 23rd from 9 until 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533, 415-362-9533. If you have a landlord-tenant question or an employment law question, Sam Wu is here at the station. And if you have a tax law or real estate law, both Frank Adam, who's also a CPA, will take your calls, and Frank is here, whether you want to call in call a CPA attorney thing, or if you want to do call a lawyer, Frank is here. And also we have patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, Ron Rohde, who's here for call a lawyer. So that's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. David, let me just ask you this. With today's economy, where people are losing jobs, employers are thinking more and more of having robots doing stuff, or employers want some of their employees who are employed in an office with the employer, or maybe they do their work at home or do part of their work at home and to have a home office. It seems to me that there are expenses here that the average person, whether he or she or they are self-employed or are doing part of their work at their home and have set aside a space for home office. What's the misto magic about that to be able to comply with the law and be able to take appropriate expenses related to the home?
Okay, well, if you're an employee, then this has to be a home office that your employer wants you to have. So you need to get a letter from the employer saying that they want you to work from a home office and provide the reasons why, so that, you know, the reasons that you can't be at your regular office to do that work. For the deductions, besides it being employer sanctioned, then you use the area, the portion of your home that is used exclusively for this office function. So it could be part of a room, it could be a whole room, it could be part of a garage or a basement, but whatever is used for that home office or storage area could be deducted. And the things that are deductible, if you're renting the property, it would be the prorated amount of the rent,
mm-hmm.
It would be the prorated amount of the utilities, prorated amount of the insurance that you pay, and any other cleaning.
You mean like homeowner's insurance, right, or renter's insurance?
Insurance, correct. Mm-hmm. So prorated part
would
of that.
Would that include like flood insurance or earthquake insurance? It would. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Any insurance. That, any insurance that's relevant to the property.
Mm-hmm.
It would include things like maintenance of the property. If you have to have a cleaner come in and clean the property, and then part of it's cleaning the office, then part of it's deductible. If the property is your home and you have a garden, then part of the gardening expense is deductible.
But how? If you're not you're not using the garden, though.
No, but it's part of the overall house expenses.
I see. Okay.
Now, if you own the home, you may want to depreciate that part of the property. But if you do depreciate it and you ever go to sell the home, then you're really selling a home and you're selling a home office.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get the exclusion for the $250,000 if you've owned it.
Now, wait a minute. What's the $250,000 exclusion? What's that?
If you own your own home and you've owned it for two out of the last 5 years and you sell it, you have not used that exclusion within those last 2 years, then you can exclude from capital gains $250,000 as
what
a
if
single
you, what
person.
If you're married?
Well, then it's $500,000.
Oh, it is. Okay. All right.
Now, but if you go to sell that property and you've taken depreciation, then you're going to recognize gain on the sale of that part unless you do a 1031 exchange into another office or something else.
So let me throw something at you. Let's say you and your wife have your bedroom. It's large enough. And you set off a certain portion of the bedroom for your home office. Let's say one-third of the bedroom. Is that something that you can do?
Yes, you can. But again, it has to be used exclusively for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're working there and your spouse goes and plays games or does internet, you know,
in that space,
then you're not using it exclusively, and that's a problem.
And you could, if you try to get away with it and you know that you're doing wrong and the IRS has one of its agents behind the palm tree, you could get in trouble, huh?
Well, right. They may ask you if your space is used exclusively, and if it's not, then they will deny the deduction.
What if, and let me come out of the bedroom.
Okay.
All right. Let's say you have a den. And you figure that this is the exclusive space that you're going to do your business. But you have in the den, you have a computer, and you use the computer for business purposes, but you also want to use it for personal purposes. What are the problems there? And when I say a computer, let's assume you paid some money for the computer, obviously.
Right.
Some money for the computer. I presume that if you're using it in your business, you can depreciate it over a certain period of time. What are the difficulties there if you have your computer in your office space, but you also want to use it for personal purposes, or sending emails to Amazon or to friends or whatever? What's the problem there?
Well, then it's not exclusive use, and you've lost the deduction.
You've lost it completely.
Right.
Oh.
So best to move the computer out of the den when you want to use it for personal purposes.
Hopefully
it's a laptop.
How do you convince the IRS that that's what you do, though?
Well, with a straight face, you have to tell them.
You can't laugh as you're telling them that.
No, got to be a straight face.
Oh my! All right. Well, let me for those of you who have questions and you'd like to pose them to my guest, David Hellman, who's a specialist in taxation law, also estate planning by the California Board of Legal Specialization and CPA. If you'd like to call in on the program, here's our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, if you'd like to call in, 866-798-8255. And if you'd like to speak to any of the lawyers for Call a Lawyer Night or any of the CPAs for our Call a CPA Night, we have combined it because I didn't want to disappoint you. It's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. David, what if someone is ill at work, is employed by someone, and becomes ill but is entitled under the contract that the employee has with the employer to sick pay. How is that treated by the IRS, that sick pay?
It's added into your ordinary income.
So it's just, it's just nothing different. Wages, you're not free and clear on that sick pay.
Right. It's just part of your wages.
I see. What if you are in an accident and let's say you are injured and you have perhaps a lawsuit ending up in a settlement for personal injuries, medical expenses, et cetera. How is the payment for personal injuries dealt with?
If you actually have had a physical injury, then the payment for that portion of the settlement is not taxable.
Oh, really?
Right. But emotional stress or whatever, that is taxable. It has to be physical injury.
If you are in an accident and you are injured and cannot work,
right,
and let's say you did not receive pay from your employer for whatever reason. Let's do that. But in your settlement of your case with the other party who, let's assume, was at fault, let's say it's an auto accident, and as part of the settlement, you are reimbursed through the settlement, or maybe it's a decision in a case, a lawsuit case, and the decision or the settlement includes back pay that you didn't get. How is that treated?
That's treated as ordinary income.
It is.
Yes.
It is. It's not free and clear.
No.
Not free and clear.
No.
Well, why don't we take our first call from Moon of San Francisco. Moon, welcome to the program. Hello, Moon. Uh-oh.
There.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Speak up if you would. You're on the air.
Okay, great. So my question goes back to the home office that you all were talking about earlier. I am self-employed, and I take a home office deduction. I have an exclusive. It's a room with a door on it, and the only thing I use it for is for my business. My husband is an employee, and he is not. He does not go to the office in Santa Cruz. He was told by his employer to set up a home office.
So Moon, if I may interrupt you for a moment, your husband is employed by some business in Santa Cruz, but he uses your home as his home office?
Correct.
Okay.
And I didn't know that you could potentially take a deduction if you're an employee. So I'm wondering about that, because then we would both have home deductions.
Right. Well, you can do that. Your husband should get a letter from the employer telling him that they want him to have a home office and the reasons why.
Okay.
And then if the area that he is using as a home office is used exclusively, now if he's using the space you're using, that's okay, because mm-hmm. all of the area is being used for home office exclusively.
Right.
But if he's using a different part of the house, then that area can be deducted also, mm-hmm. again, if it's used exclusively for a home office.
I take it, Moon, you have never gotten the advice of either a CPA or a tax specialist with respect to your use of your home as a home office. Is that right?
Well, I have a CPA who I've been working with for 20-some years.
Ah, okay.
This is a new job for my husband of about 6 months. And so we're gearing up to file again, of course.
Ah, yeah.
I just never knew that an employee could potentially do a home office deduction. And he has the same situation as me. He has a separate room with a door on it.
Mm.
And both of these rooms are used exclusively for our work.
So Moon, your husband does not spend any time at his employer's location in Santa Cruz, is that right?
Correct.
Well, that's interesting. So is he employed full-time?
He is.
He is, okay.
Yeah.
So, and how long has this been going on?
He started, August of 2016.
Okay, so it's fairly recent, so it's not that much.
Right, but so for that right. period of 2016, from August through December, you could take the deductions for that part, that room, for that proportion. So essentially a third of the expenses for that a little over, well, right. you know, from right. whenever okay. in August through December 31. So.
Right. Okay. So then he just needs a letter from his employer that he needs to have a home office and the reasons why. And should he have one for each subsequent year?
Not necessary, as long as it's stating that it's going on indefinitely.
Okay.
Got it. Okay, thank you.
Moon, very nice to talk with you. Thank you very much for your call. Hi. We have also now Brandon. Brandon, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thanks Hi. For having me.
Sure.
I am calling about a home. I'm going to purchase a home. It closes on Friday.
Mm.
This house is in Georgia, in Augusta, Georgia, which is where my parents live. And so they are going to live in the home.
Mm-hmm.
It was so that they could have a little more room. And they're going to pay as much as they can of the mortgage. So my question is, should what they pay toward the mortgage be counted as income for me? And then, you know, how will that play out in terms of what I can write off at the
That's end? That's very interesting. And your parents will not, their names will not be on the title of the property. Is that correct?
No. They
will
not
be. They're your tenants.
Yeah.
And in essence, they are paying rent to you by way of paying a portion of the mortgage. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What do you say about that,
well,
David?
All right, so
don't make him start crying now, please.
Well, you've got several things going on. One is you're making a gift to them to the extent that they're not paying full fair market rent, and that is subject to the limitations for filing a gift tax return. If you've got $14,000 a year for each parent. And after you've
so that could be up to $28,000,
and then after that, you should be filing a gift tax return.
Ah, okay.
In terms of the deductibility of what you're spending, you have two choices: one, to treat it as a rental property, and the other, in which case you'd report all the expenses that you're paying out of pocket and showing the rent that they're paying you. The other one is that you could treat it as a second home, potentially, and then just deduct the amount of mortgage, the portion that you're paying, and the property taxes, and not try and treat it as a rental property. So you've got that option. Second home may be more consistent with what you're really doing because they're not paying full market rent, but you do have the option.
This is my first home. I don't own another.
So you
home.
Don't own
you
one
don't
here.
Own
okay. Brandon. Okay.
No, it could be treated as it's not your primary residence, but it could be treated as a second home.
Even if he's renting from
yeah,
someone
he's
else.
Renting from someone else here. That's his primary residence.
Brandon,
in the house
if,
in Georgia.
You don't have an accountant or a CPA or someone to help you?
I don't yet.
Well, I think if I may suggest this, in my job in the last 32 years as being a deputy DA in consumer protection and trying to help consumers be protected and not make mistakes, I think you need to at least seek the advice of certainly a CPA or a tax attorney to make sure you don't get yourself into any trouble.
That sounds right to me.
Yeah, I'm awful glad you called, and good luck on this. It sounds like a really nice thing you're doing for your parents, and hopefully maybe someday you'll live in it yourself.
Sure.
Okay, Brandon.
Well, I'll always have a room when I go there.
That's good. Hey, we always need a room. Very, very nice to have you call us. This, by the way, is the end of the statewide version of the program, and for those of you who are not familiar with it, we record the first half hour of the program, and then we send it out to a number of stations in California that air the first half hour. So we now continue on a full hour basis, second half hour, both in the Bay Area. We're live on the internet at www.klw.org, and the entire program is uplinked to the NPR satellite. For distribution to some stations outside of California that take the program. So let me do this again. And this is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is David Hellman. David has been a great help in this program, a great supporter, a great provider of very, very valuable tax information. He's a specialist in taxation law, also in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His office is in San Rafael. And I want to give you also the toll-free number again for you to call in if you have a tax question you'd like to speak to David. It's 866, and this is toll-free, by the way, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We are also doing a Call a CPA night so that if you have tax questions, you can speak to a CPA off the air or Frank Adam, who's a tax attorney. Frank is doing both duties tonight, both a CPA as well as he is a CPA as well as a call a lawyer. So for the CPA, Call a CPA tax attorney, it's Laura Ross and John Michael Rinder of the CPA firm of Eisner Amper in San Francisco. Dan Ross, who's a CPA in San Bruno, and Frank Adam, tax attorney from Pacifica. For Call a Lawyer, we have workers' compensation law, a certified specialist, Robert Wyman, who is here at the station. If you have a criminal law question, Jeff Hayden, who's a certified specialist in criminal law, who's also the chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization, he'll take calls from you tomorrow. That's Thursday, February 23rd, from 9:30 to 11 a.m. at 650-743-6701, 650-743-6701. If you have a question about estate planning or probate law, John Martin, who's a certified specialist in estate planning, who is in Menlo Park, will take your calls until 8 o'clock tonight at 650-430-4664. That's until 7 to 8 p.m. tonight, February 22nd, 650-430-4664. If you have family law questions, Janet Frankel, who's a certified specialist in family law, will take your calls tomorrow, February 23rd, from 9 till 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533, 415-362-9533. Here at the station for landlord-tenant is Sam Wu of San Francisco. For tax law, real estate broker, again, Frank Adam is here of Pacifica. And for patent law, aviation law, lemon law, BB arbitration, Ron Rohde of Palo Alto is here. And if you're being chased by your, let's say, creditors, if it's really getting bad, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available tomorrow, that Thursday, February 23rd, from 8 a.m. to noon. His 800 number is 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and just get his voicemail, leave your name and phone number, say you listen to your legal rights, and Leon will call you back. And that's tomorrow. So we're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, February 22nd. For those of you who have tax questions or tax concerns or problems, please feel free. We're trying to help you prepare yourselves to do a good, decent tax return for 2016. Our toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Let me ask you this, David, if you would, while we're waiting to see who might want to further call in. If, for example, someone goes through bankruptcy and debts are canceled, are those debts in any way considered some kind of income for persons as far as the IRS is concerned?
Not if it's discharged as part of the bankruptcy.
Okay. So that's if discharged by the bankruptcy court, that's free and clear. What is the law today on the cancellation of student loans? I have seen something recently, and I'm not sure whether how far this has gone, where there is some effort to be able to cancel student loans. I don't know if you've seen that.
I believe it all relates to those schools that went out of business, where people paid tuition and had student loans. They were subsequently forgiven because of not being able to get anything for the money they paid. And so those, the IRS has said, are not going to be treated as as discharge of income for tax purposes.
But what if the student, let's say, has paid something on the loan over a period of time, but the school went out of business, but the student hasn't gotten that portion of the value of what he or she has paid on the loan? Is there anything that student can put in the tax return as a dischargeable debt or something like that to reduce taxes?
Generally, trying to get income going to school to learn a trade or become proficient as a professional in a business, whatever it is, that training itself, unless you're already employed in the business, is not a deductible expense. So having a discharge for that probably is not deductible.
Really?
Okay. I mean, if you want to claim that it was fraud and go through, then you might be able to take a bad debt, excuse me, not a bad debt loss, but a claim on the basis that it was a fraudulent payment. And then you can take a deduction as a casualty loss.
Oh, really? As a casualty loss.
It ends up being treated like a casualty loss. So it really depends on your facts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with any cases where the IRS has looked at that distinction.
Not yet.
Be a little too creative, but it's a possibility.
Well, thank you for your creativity. All right. Again, you're awful quiet out there. I don't know why you're being so quiet, because we are. You just don't want to face the whole idea of preparing your tax return or getting it ready. But here's our toll-free number in case you want to talk with David Hellman, 866-798-8255. And for Call a CPA Night or Call a Lawyer Night, it's 1-800-525-9917. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149. 650-369-4149. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Let me throw something else at you, if I can, David. If someone is wrongfully terminated by an employer, and they either have a settlement or there's a trial, and if there is a trial, the court concludes that this former employee was wrongfully terminated, and as part of the settlement or part of the judgment, this person is awarded or receives back pay. How is that treated where there's been a wrongful termination?
It's ordinary income.
It is okay.
Ordinary income.
So it is ordinary income. All right. What if you win on the lottery? Is that ordinary income, or is it totally exempt?
Well, if you win in California, it's exempt for California purposes, but
really?
For federal purposes, it is taxable.
So on the California return, you don't have to declare it.
Right. It gets exempted. It gets
Why is it exempted for California?
That was just part of the law when they adopted the lottery.
The California lottery.
Right.
Okay. But if, for example, let's say you go to Las Vegas and you gamble there. Let's say you're a California resident.
Yeah.
You go to Las Vegas.
It's income.
Is that if you win, of course.
Yes.
But if you lose, it's not deductible, is it?
Well,
or is it?
Well, you can deduct gambling losses to the extent of your winnings.
Ah, gotcha.
And most people lose more than they win, so they're limited to what they won, but they at least net out to zero.
So there you are, everybody. It's better not to gamble at all.
Right.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, welcome to your legal rights. Jerry, are you there?
Yeah.
Hi, go ahead.
I'm eating dinner.
Oh, good for you.
I have something in my mouth. Give me 1 second.
All right, we'll give you 1 second. While Jerry tried to finish his dinner, let me just, Jerry, hold on a minute. You finish chewing.
Now.
Hold on just a minute. Your legal rights, this whole hour, in case you're interested, is available as a podcast free of charge if you'd like it. It's at www.kalw.org/subscribe, S-U-B-S-C-R-I-B-E, www.kalw.org/subscribe. Now, Jerry, what do you have in mind?
I have to know something about the government sent me a big check, and now they want to collect taxes on it. I'm the guardian of my brother, and he's retarded, and he works in Pennsylvania. We don't have a whole lot of contact with each other, but one day I got a call from Social Security. Mm-hmm. He had gone back to work. I didn't know it. He worked for 49 years at the same place, and he had paid Social Security and Medicare and everything else, and this guy from Social Security said, we want to send you a check for $12,585.
Payable to your brother?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which was wonderful. I said, hey, send it.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for a lot of details. I did get some details. I won't bore you with them.
Okay.
But anyway, come tax time, it's all taxable. It took his income way up. He's going to have to pay the tax on the $12,000, which is bad enough, but it puts him up almost to the minimum, that minimum tax thing. I think I can schedule it down, but what I want to know is, some of that is not taxable, but I cannot figure out how to go to worksheet 2 and 3 and 4, which I have to do. I've been dealing with this thing. I've been going crazy all
week. Are you using computer software to help you?
No, I'm not.
All right. I suggest
you. I've never had this kind of problem before. I've been doing my taxes for about 65 years. I've never been audited. Everything's been fine. This is the first time I ever ran into anything.
Well,
stump me.
Here we are, Jerry.
All right, so part of it is, depending on what earnings he does have, how old is your brother? Is he over 65?
Yeah, he's 69.
Okay. So part of it is going to be taxable.
Yes,
it could be all the way up to 85% of it.
Okay.
So what you need is to get some computer software to help you, because it'll do the calculation for you and you won't have to go to all those worksheets.
But this was, Jerry, this was a payment of Social Security?
It's back Social Security benefits.
It's a payback, the benefit.
Yeah, it's benefits they should have been paying him before.
Why would that be?
Social Security is taxable.
So it is. There we
are. Up to 85%, depending upon your income level.
Well, Jerry, go and try to get yourself some computer software and figure it out, will you?
What should I get? What should I try?
Well, we can't tell you what to do on the air, but there's a lot of stuff available in the different. Go to some stationery stores that carry these kind of things.
Okay. Jerry, let me Jerry,
go online.
Jerry, let me suggest that we have several CPAs who are here for Call a CPA, and they are not on the air. If you like, call the 800 number, 800-525-9917, and talk with one of the CPAs or Frank Adam and see if they can give you the brand of a computer software, okay?
Can I call them right now?
Right now, man. Right
Thank
now.
You, sir. Appreciate it.
Yeah, okay. Take care. Bye-bye. All right, and now we have Steve. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I finished my taxes. I got a tax return. I was happy with it, and then I just got an investment statement kind of after I'd already done my taxes, wondering if I should go back and redo it. And the only reason I'm wondering is because I actually had a substantial loss on the investment. And so I'm not sure what the impact would be on my taxes and whether it would be worthwhile to actually go through and redo it.
Well, if you had, this was a loss from the sale of a stock?
Correct.
Okay. So you can deduct up to $3,000 of loss, capital loss, against ordinary income. So it could present you with the opportunity to get a refund, both for federal and California purposes. So it probably makes sense to do amended returns.
Okay.
Steve, you've already filed your return for 2016?
I did, and that's why I'm wondering. I don't know how much of a hassle it is to actually an amendment.
Well, if you use computer software, if you have a preparer, then it's not overly difficult, because the software captures all the information that you've already put in, and it's just a matter of adding the additional information and indicating it's an amended return, and then the software should do most of the rest of the work for you.
Got it. Sounds pretty simple.
Okay. Good luck, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. All right, again, we're doing this program on Wednesday evening, February 22nd. It's a live program, and for those of you who are listening to the live program, Here's our toll-free number if you'd like to speak with David Hellman on the air. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you would like to speak with any of the CPAs or tax lawyer here or any of the other attorneys who are here at the station, that number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And for those of you who would like to get some or have to talk with Jeff Hayden about a criminal law question, he's available tomorrow. That's Thursday, February 23rd from 9:30 to 11 at 650-743-6701. If you have a question on estate planning, John Martin will be available until 8 p.m. this evening, February 22nd at 650-430-4664. If you have a family law question, Janet Frankel will be available tomorrow, February 23rd from 9 till 11 a.m. at 415-362-9533. And if you're being chased by your creditors, Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy, will be available tomorrow, Thursday, February 23rd, from 8 a.m. to noon at 800-477-3111. 800-477-3111. All right, let's take a call now from Cindy. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I have two questions, if I may.
Sure.
Okay, so the first one is, my parents are 92 and 93, they have not gotten yet their refund from the IRS for the tax year of 2015. We were in contact with the CPA who did the return, and we kept calling them periodically. Finally, they sent letters to the IRS, and finally we got something back that I can track on their IRS site saying that it's in process. So now I know they have it, it's being processed, but 2015, is that, are there other folks that are experiencing this, and then can we also get interest on that? That's a long time to wait. It's $3,000-something. It's
right.
Not a huge amount, but still, at their age, it does count.
Let's have you hold on, Cindy, and get an answer right now for the first question.
Right. So part of the issue may be that the government was one of two things. Either there was some information missing, or they are concerned about fraud, and they are trying to verify that this was a return filed by your parents and that your parents are the one due the refund. There's been a lot of identity fraud. The federal government loses tens of millions of dollars a year in fraudulent payments. Now, they do pay interest for every day over 45 days, so they will get interest with it when you do get the refund.
Perfect.
Now, your second question, Cindy.
The second question, I think you touched upon it earlier, but I didn't get it all. I have received a settlement for being in a car accident, and it was for bodily injury from the person that hit me from his insurance company. So is that settlement taxable?
Now, wait a minute. You're confusing. You said you got a payment, you're getting a settlement for your bodily injury. Is that including loss of income or just for your injuries?
Just for the injury.
Yeah, the injury portion is not taxable. For anything else, it probably is going to be taxable. Then you also have an issue if you're paying attorney fees, if you paid any attorney fees. Those get treated as a miscellaneous itemized deduction, but only the portion of them that would be for the other part of the settlement, not the personal injury part.
Oh, really?
Okay. So you have to prorate any attorney fees based on the allocation of the settlement between personal injury and other things.
But excluding attorney fees, if it's just the bodily injury, not for loss of wages, that is taxable?
No.
Non-taxable.
No.
Not taxable.
Not taxable.
Personal
if I
injury.
Was taxed, then, and I had my return professionally done, I was taxed on that. So how I...
If you had a physical injury, it should not have been taxed.
Okay.
How much did you receive with regard to your bodily injury? What was the amount, Cindy?
$56,000.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think you need to go see a tax specialist on this.
Yeah, go back to the CPA and ask them why.
Yeah.
Because, Code Section 105, you're not supposed to have to pay for that.
Okay. Code Section 105.
Believe
thank
that's
you
the
very
right
much.
Number.
Please do that, Cindy. Yeah, take care. By the way, I want to let you all know that in that this program is funded by the California Board of Legal Specialization. If you're looking for any one of 11 certified specialists, you can go to the CalBAR, www.calbar.ca.gov, and then go to the upper part of your screen on your computer, click on legal specialists, and then your county and any one of the 11 specialties, and find out which one you would like to contact and contact and get some at least initial consultation. All right, one other thing for those of you, before we take our next call, for those of you who are in the Bay Area, the San Mateo County Law Library on Thursday, March 9th from noon until 1 p.m. is having a free identity theft presentation. If you've ever been concerned that others have obtained your online account passwords, your Social Security number, your credit card information, and you want to know what do I do about it, San Mateo County Deputy District Attorney Vishal Jangla will be making a presentation. You're invited to attend this free lecture at the Law Library, which is at 710 Hamilton Street in Redwood City on Thursday, March 9th from noon till 1. Bring your sack lunch, if you will. This is a free presentation. And if you'd like more information, the number to call for the library is area code 650-363-4913. 650-363-4913. All right, we have Mark. Welcome to the program.
Chuck, thank you, and thank you for this wonderful service that you're providing for all of us.
Well, thank you.
And I thought I would give David something a little meaty so that he wouldn't just think all of them are single-layer questions. So this is about a four-part question, and it is somewhat reminiscent of something someone asked earlier about purchasing a home, only this is the opposite. We were very fortunate in that the house that my daughter was renting was offered by the landlord for sale. Okay, level one, we were living in a house free and clear. We took a first on this house, which is our primary residence. We used the cash proceeds from that to purchase the house in which my daughter continues to live, for which we are very grateful. Now, here are all the questions that therefore occur. Number one, so you get one out of the way, the interest, the mortgage interest that we will be paying on this mortgage, which is on our primary residence, is that treated as normal mortgage residence interest, or because we use the proceeds for a purchase somewhere else, does that change how that will be applied?
Yeah, well, you should use it as a deduction against the income for the property your daughter's living in. I'm assuming she is paying you rent, but that may not be true.
She is.
Okay, so deduct it on Schedule E, page 1, for the rental property for your daughter.
All right, now, that leads us to the second and far more, I think, if not profound, at least problematical set of questions. We were fortunate in that when we moved twice, instead of selling those other homes, we were able to hold on to them, and they became rental properties, and they have been rental properties for quite some time. Those houses are in very good condition, and they do generate sufficient income, quite a bit of income, relative to what some people might make. But the new house, the mortgage payment that we're making is less than what she's paying for rent. It is, however, underlined, I was wise enough, I hope, to do this the right way, we are keeping her at the same rent that her landlord was charging her. So that if the government looks at this, I don't think they can infer that there's a gift being made, because we have not lowered her rent and she's not living rent-free, and we did that on purpose so we could establish the bona fide of us being her landlord. But on top of that, the house that we purchased, it's here in Oakland, and we were able to get a bargain because it's an old house and it needs a lot of work. And my assumption is that I can say to the government, I have three rental properties, and they are all rental properties, and I can commingle, I can commingle the funds, and therefore money that might be a net gain from some of the other properties will now be applied toward doing some of the fix-up, such as roofs, on this newly acquired property, and I don't have to show that as profit, take the money out, and then use post-tax dollars to put a roof on her house.
Wow.
Hey, well, I want to ask you,
boy, you've been spending a lot of time waiting for this one. Mark, stop. We're nearly out of time. I want to have David respond to at least what you've brought up so far.
So for tax reporting purposes on Schedule E, you report all three properties separately. They will come up with one total, which will be, I'm assuming that your daughter's house is probably not breaking even, maybe losing money.
Yes.
But it will end up netting the three of them for what you're going to pay tax on. To the extent you are paying money for major repairs, those will probably end up being capitalized and depreciated over the useful life of those repairs. So if you're replacing a roof, usually that's 20-year life, because that's what most warranties are for on roofs.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing something like putting in carpeting, well, maybe the carpet will last 10 years, so you'll get a 10-year life. You're replacing appliances, maybe they'll have a 5-year or a 7-year life. So that's how it works, but you don't get to write off the whole thing at once. You have to depreciate it.
Right.
Mark, I've got to stop you. Mark, I've got to stop you because we're just about out of time.
Well, I thank you. What you gave me was very helpful, and I appreciate all of
you. Mark, what I want to suggest to you and anyone else who has a question who has not had a chance to talk with David at this point, the CPAs are still here. If you'd like to call, I'm sure they'll spend a few more minutes. If you'd like to call, they're at 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. So thank you very much, Mark, for calling. We have just about run out of time, and David, I just want to thank you for being with us. It's been wonderful.
Enjoyed it.
As always, it's been wonderful. And again, everyone, I just want to let you know that if you're looking for a certified specialist, go to your computer and the State Bar's website for the California Board of Legal Specialization, www.calbar.ca.gov. And up in the upper left corner is Legal Specialist. Click that on, find your county, and then find one or more of the specialties that you'd like to be involved with. Again, for those who have not had a chance to speak with our CPAs, that number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And, David, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Glad to be here.
It's always great to have you here. Next week, by the way, or next time on Your Legal Rights, I want you to know that we're going to discuss the Office of Independent Police Auditor of the City of San Jose, California. This office provides independent oversight of police misconduct and is one of similar offices throughout the United States. And my guests are B.J. Fadum, a specialist in family law and a member of the San Jose Independent Police Auditor Commission, and Walter Katz, City of San Jose Independent Police Auditor, and that's next time on Your Legal Rights. And funding for this regular program has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar and by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marin, production assistant Mark McClain. And I thank you for listening to Your Legal Rights on your public radio station, and I hope you join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.